I really am all about that.
That's got to be a humbling moment too, just a little bit.
but I'll tell you that the truth is, in a typical scene, like we say this all the time now, but like when you have these mass shootings, mm-hmm. right? The women always duck behind the men.
Sure.
That's because God designed men to be protectors.
Right.
You know,
right.
Defenders, protectors, and overseers. So it's natural in the nature of this podcast is going to go, you know, probably viral and we'll all be sued. It's okay. It's okay.
Hello and welcome to Rescuing Churches with Stan and Josh Gibbons. This is the official podcast of 614 Ministries, where we exist to renew vision and restore hope at struggling churches across the country. With over 80% of churches in decline and 1,500 pastors a month battling depression, we strive to equip members and encourage ministers to pursue new directions of stability and growth.
Guys, welcome to the show. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Josh, here with my dad, Stan. And on today's episode of Rescuing Churches, we're going to be looking at five things that you can do to stabilize an unstable church. Now, first, before we even get into these five things, let's touch briefly on what actually makes a church unstable within the particular context, Dad, that you're referring to here. And also, let's clarify, because some things like doctrine, value, scripture, spiritual disciplines will not ever change and shouldn't.
Correct.
But if
part of your core stability.
Yeah, exactly. But if a church stays so stable that they're not willing to change at all on anything, like music or ministry methods or stuff like that,
color of the pews, where the pulpit is, what kind of pulpit it is.
Yeah, what kind of pulpit we should have, that would not be a good kind of thing. So kind of lay
sounds like you've been reading Dr. Tom Rainer's.
Kind of lay the groundwork here and spread out the context for us a little bit and do some differentiating.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier, Dr. Rainer mentioned the importance of not being a stable church in the context of all the different things you need to change for a church to stay healthy.
Right. Right.
But there are things that have to be stable in a church, the unity of the body, the good fellowship that exists there, the consistency of the staff's ability to minister, those kind of things.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about, being stable. When those things become unstable, the church is in trouble.
So we're talking about the core elements of a healthy functioning church.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Right. Like, for example, when I think of unstable and I can only speak from experience. Not that I've been through a ton of unstable, but I've been through a lot of unstable. And that includes the big church in Birmingham where we served for 20 years.
Right.
And then this smaller church here, if you have a staff turnover, it can be a healthy staff turnover, like he just needs to leave and go somewhere else because God's called him there. That can create instability. But then you can have an unhealthy staff turnover,
right?
Somebody in sin within the leadership, and that's a real challenge.
Sure.
The church takes a huge beating on that emotionally, physically, and spiritually. If you have families within a church, in a smaller church especially, you see this where one family gets a rift against another one, and then there's this war that's going on, and people have to make decisions about what side are we on, and then everybody's all mad at each other, and you know, just good Christian, you know, Christians living together.
It just happens.
So sin and leadership, families warring with each other, and staff turnovers, those are some big issues that can create instability within a church. You might just have something as simple though as a key family member in your church. If you're a smaller church, every strong family that supports you is really important. And you might just have a family that gets called away to work, to work out of town, and they're moving.
Yep.
We fellowshiped yesterday at the Academy graduation here at our church, you know, with a good friend who moved away. And man, do we miss him. He was very stabilizing and strong helper to our church.
Right.
And the Lord called him to Atlanta. So, you know, even a key leader in your church that would pass away, you know, when Robert E. Cochran, our favorite elder,
right,
you know, when the Lord took him home, that's just that's a little destabilizing because he's an anchor to all of us. He's really a foundation. And you might have something as simple as a crisis within the community, something that happens in the community that your church kind of got entangled in, and it creates a whole bunch of rift of what's going on and what's happening. And now everybody's head's on a swivel. Everybody's trying to figure out what the church should do or shouldn't do with that crisis. Some of these riots and all this kind of stuff we're going through currently in our culture.
Do we
jump in? Do we not jump in? Why did that person post this? You know, all that kind of stuff can create some instability in a church. And when the church begins to get unstable, it just loses its effectiveness. So that's the kind of stability I'm talking about.
Okay, that's good. So, that kind of brings us in and clarifies a little bit between the two different types of stability and that we're talking, you know, that you could potentially talk about here. So you've got a list of five things that you can do to help stabilize an unstable church that's within that kind of unstable framework. So let's kind of look at these a little bit. The first one on your list here is to seek out and train and encourage strong male leadership. So let me just ask you, why is it important that this be male leadership and not include women? Because there's plenty of controversy and debate today about women preachers and women pastors. So what's the biblical model?
Yeah, not a chauvinist in that at all. Biblical model in the New Testament, which we're teaching through at our church. So it's easy for me to stand really clear on this. The biblical model is a church to be led by elders, 1 Timothy chapter 3. And an elder is a man who aspires to the office, men who aspire to the office. There can be deaconesses and deacons leading the church, helping lead the church as well. But the model in the New Testament is to be led by men. I didn't write that. I'm just reporting the news and I'm supporting the news. And I'm going to tell you this. If you find a church that's led by strong spiritual men, it's going to be a strong church. If you find a church that's not led by strong spiritual men, either weaker men or led by women, it's not going to have the same impact and strength. And God knows the best way to do all that. By the way, it doesn't mean that women can't lead well. Women can't do things well. It's the order that God created and the plan God created. But the key is they have to be spiritually minded men. They have to be scripturally strong. They have to have a good reputation. They have to have good character, all the stuff that's listed in there. When you can create, as a pastor, when you're going through instability, times of instability, something's happened, you need to rally to those men and or train those men to get their act together spiritually to help stabilize that moment. It's the men of the church that stabilize things. And I know there's a lot in our culture about men and women being equal and all that. I watched a really great documentary the other night. Our silent partner would love it, called The Hornet's Nest on Amazon. It's about an embedded bunch of reporters in Fallujah and some of the military stuff that was going on there, some of the deep stuff that was happening there and all this crazy stuff that's happening. And one of the parts of that movie is a team of women that fly helicopters into all that stuff and help rescue the guys that have got themselves pinned down and wounded. And it's a helicopter full of women. And I don't think you'd want to mess with one of them.
You don't want to mess with those
ladies.
So
I'm all about that. But the nature God created us with is, as men, is to step in front of the woman that's about to be harmed.
Sure.
And the woman's nature is to step behind the man that's willing to straighten his shoulders, straighten his neck and back and go, hey, you can't do that. You're not going to harm this person.
Yeah.
So,
and a lot of that you even mentioned, I remember you mentioned even some of that natural stuff, in the sermon that you did on strong women, from the Strong Church series that you're still currently in the middle of. Mm-hmm. So we might actually drop that sermon link into the show notes.
Sure.
That might be a good idea to drop that in there. So,
and
you talk here about the key, you mentioned it a second ago, is that the men need to be spiritually minded. What are some signs of spiritually minded men? Like, is there a interview process that you would recommend for elders? How would you go about kind of, you know,
well, obviously you're going to take, those elements of the scriptures that are the list of bullet point list of what a person looks like. And you're just going to help evaluate each other. And nobody meets them perfectly, not even yourself as the senior pastor.
Sure.
That list is a bit overwhelming. But to be striving for those and to desire to be those and to want to hold each other accountable. And I can tell you this, when a group of men stand around a church and they want to talk more about the scriptures or what the Lord's doing in my life or who I'm trying to help spiritually, who I witness to, those are the men I'm going to gravitate towards to say, I'd like you to consider being one of our deacons down the road here. We'd like to put you in a training discipleship model and see if the Lord would lead you to eventually come on staff, come and support us as lay staff, as a deacon or an elder. If they're going to sit around and talk football all day long or, you know, whatever, it's a whole different world. And it's not wrong.
Now, what about like for that example, that latter example, how would you go about kind of gently turning down someone that you realize does not meet the qualifications to be an elder? They're not necessarily a bad guy.
I'm not going to turn them down if they're asking to be that. Right. I'm not turning them down. I'm saying, hey, let me help you get there.
Help you get there.
I'm going to disciple you into that. If that's something you want to do, because the Bible says you should desire the office.
Right. Sure.
So I'm going to help move them there. But it is going to mean eventually when you come to church, you're not going to be as worried about who won the ball game.
Right.
You know, whether SEC football is ever coming back. Lord help us all. Right.
Please,
but God. But you're actually going to come to church and say, hey, let me tell you about this guy I met at the laundromat the other night I was witnessing to.
Yeah.
And we're going to have that conversation real quick before we talk about
the priorities,
the weather, you know, or, you know, murder hornets.
Yeah. So that makes sense. All right. And the second thing on your list here is that, you need to communicate to the church your goals, visions, and plans for stability. So how and where do you kind of go about doing this?
I think you do it often, often, often. Communicate, communicate, communicate. At your main service time, at the close of a service, we had a little instability thing happen last week at our church, in our little small church.
Right.
And it was just important for me when we closed our service out today and we weren't on Facebook Live anymore to let our church family know, here's the stability issues. Here's what we're doing. Here's what you can know. And there's guys working on it behind the scenes and we'll take care of it for you.
Right.
And so I think you communicate steps and goals and vision and structure. If you lost a staff member, you talk about what you're doing to recover that staff member. If they fell into sin and they had to be, you know, let go because of that sin, you update them on where they are if you can. Or more importantly, you tell them how we're going to help cover that till we can get somebody. We ask for volunteers, but we just constantly are communicating what we know and how we know it and what we can do. And we don't have to have all the plan in place. That's a young pastor mistake many of us make. We don't need to talk about it till we know everything. No, let's just talk about what we know. It's really, if you think of it as a family, the church body is a family. When the family gets together at night and there's been some trauma to the family during the day, the family sits around and goes, hey, how are we going to help with that? What do I need to do? And so we, as pastors, we need to communicate to the family like it's a family, probably more often than we do. Most of us hold back information from them that we probably should share more often. So, and I think that's part of that is as pastor, just being vulnerable enough to say we're doing the best we can, open to your ideas.
Right.
But let me know how to, I'll let you know what we're thinking about. So, so I just think communication is really important in an unstable time.
Yeah.
You got to communicate a lot.
Yeah. And you have a note here about, making sure that as a pastor, don't assume that everyone needs to see you as being this invincible person in the midst of the instability and this all-knowing person.
Yeah, same deal. Okay. If you don't know the answer, just tell.
You think a lot of pastors probably struggle with that? I mean, what can contribute to that mindset, you know?
The body of Christ contributes to the mindset of that.
They kind of build up this lofty idea.
Sure, you're
pastor.
The most spiritual man in the room, so you better have all the answers.
You better have all the answers.
And you walk into the room feeling like you better have all the answers, but sometimes you don't.
Yeah, well, how do you overcome that?
I believe the plurality of elders is how you overcome it. You say, hey, we are going to work on this. As a team are working on this. We're going to pray about it. I think you bring prayer into it a lot. You say, we're praying about what to do. We're seeking God. We're doing our very best to know the best thing to do. Stay in touch. Well, as soon as we know something, we'll let you know. Communicate, communicate, communicate.
That's really good. All right. Number three on our list here is to keep a close group of leaders, formal and informal, for counsel, advice, and vision. What is the best way to go about doing this?
Yeah, I think as a pastor, your leadership team, your elders especially, your godly men that surround you, if it's one or two or five, you keep them really close and you stay close to them. And I don't mean close at church. I mean close in life. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're a fisherman, you try to figure out a way to fish with them. If you're a hunter, you try to figure out when can we go hunting together.
Right.
If you're you know, if you like to play beanbag toss in your backyard, if that's your thing, cornhole. What a terrible name for a game.
Terrible name for a game.
Yeah. But if you like to play cornhole in your backyard, and that's the thing you love to do, then you've got your friends that are your accountable leadership in your church. You're having them over for grilling out hot dogs and we're playing cornhole together because it's you.
Yeah.
And so you're getting to know them. You're keeping close. I recommend you have them in your home pretty regularly. Have meetings in your homes with them and do the best you can, if possible, to go meet in their homes. Get to know their world. That's just good shepherding. Mm-hmm. And if you're close to that group of leaders in an unstable time, they're not going to fall away.
Right.
They're going to stick with you. They're actually going to become this support team that talks very positively through a hard time. And so shepherding the core creates a great restabilizing during an unstable time. You as a leader stay very close to that core and let them know what you're doing and what you're going on and be vulnerable with them. If you're miserable through that, we went through a bunch of storms here, spiritual storms and people storms in our past. And I would tell our elders, man, this is driving me crazy.
Yeah.
I gotta go shoot my bow for a while, let my tension off.
Right.
You know,
right.
Kind of deal. So we have to practice that together and we have to stay close to each other.
Yeah.
It's really just having that core group of accountability with you, mm-hmm. counsel, advice. And then I think a good pastor could also do it. Within the local community, you find a mentor. You find another pastor that's 10 years your senior down the road that you can have coffee with and just scream.
I was going to ask you because you have mentors outside of the local church body that you pastor.
Absolutely.
So what's your personal suggestion or tip on how a pastor who speak to the pastor that especially is younger, maybe in the ministry or even the older pastor that doesn't have a mentor, how do you go about finding one of those? Is that like a God brings it to you thing?
Or it's easier than it used to be, I think, because if I'm in a community, name the town, community, whatever, Smithville, whatever, USA.
Right.
And I need some accountability and a mentor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to look at all the churches around me and I'm going to start going to their Facebook page or their web page and watching those pastors preach. And the one that's 10 years older, 20 years older than me and rings my bell.
Yeah.
I'm going to call him on the phone one day and say, hey, I'm a young pastor around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
I really could use some lunchtime with you
or
I'll buy the coffee or whatever it is. And just see. Now he may be swamped.
Yeah, and turn you down.
Yeah, and not do that. So now I go to the next guy. I just keep looking. Somebody in that community, God's going to give you that person if you're seeking them out. And it's a little easier now.
Oh yeah.
Back in my day, you had to go knock on doors.
You had
to wait for you see. Hey, that car's never at that church. Now it is. Maybe that's the pastor. Hey, is that the pastor? No, you're the secretary. No, you're the cleaning lady. Well, do you know the pastor's name? Because I'd like to get in touch with him. Here's my card. Right. So now you can just go online and do it.
Yeah, Facebook will take care of all that for you.
Exactly. Google him.
Yep.
So I think that's a good possibility. But you should have somebody that mentors you that can keep you stable to stabilize the people.
So absolutely.
Keep you from losing your little mind.
Yep. Definitely. All right. So number four on your list here of ways that you can stabilize an unstable church is to ask other local stable ministers and ministries to pray for and advise you. And that kind of goes along.
Building off of what we were just saying. You call on those people. I did this through our other crisis that we went through a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I started reaching out to my local pastor friends saying, you've got to help me pray through this and think through this.
Yeah.
Especially you got to help me pray through this and give me some advice.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. I had tremendous help through a time that was very hard. I didn't have all the answers, but Bible says in Proverbs, there's wisdom in a multitude of counselors. Well, that's especially true for a pastor.
Oh, yeah.
We mentioned this in a previous podcast on burdens. Pastors typically don't have to go to somebody for advice on basic stuff.
Right, right.
And I'm not saying that's because we're smarter. You know, God just gives us insight through scriptures and experience. So we don't just, if there's a smaller issue, we tend to be able to work through that fine.
Sure.
So when we finally need help.
Yeah.
It's some serious questions.
It's code red. It's red alert.
Exactly. Yeah. It's DEFCON 5 or whatever that is.
It's one of those issues.
Yeah. And we need help.
Yeah. I need to bring in another.
So now you got to go get these very godly mentors that can speak into that. And, you know, again, I did that recently on a phone. I made several phone calls to pastors, you know, who held their breath for a little while after I gave them the question. Cause like, man, that's a hard one. I went, that's why I'm calling. I don't have an easy one. I don't need to call the easy stuff. But they were like, this is really complicated. We need to think through that and pray through that. And they were helpful to me. I took all their advice, by the way.
That's excellent.
Did exactly what they said.
Sometimes that's what you got to do. And then lastly on the list here, number five, is to pray and ask God to help you connect with new community people to bring into your church. So how do new attendees kind of bring about an increased sense of stability in a church?
It's the vision. The goal, one of the visions and goals of your church is to reach the lost, reach new families, to reach out to people. And that being the goal, right?
Right.
If during your instability, you can collect up, you may be so unstable, you really can't handle it right away. But as soon as you start sensing we're getting ourselves back to some level of semblance, just ask the Lord to bring somebody in and get your core leaders that you're shepherding, get them to start reaching out. And let's see if we can get just one new person to walk through the door. Smaller church, that's huge. When one new person comes to the door and kind of lands and is comfortable there, it brings stability to the church instantly. Cause like, hey, we're not some weird, you know, redheaded stepchild of, you know, some crazy thing that's happening.
Right.
We're actually okay as a church now. Look, this guy likes us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think you pray and ask God to help you get some community people coming in, you know, some new guests coming in, new attendees.
What are some practical ways to build those community relations? Let's just pause here for a minute because that kind of community relationship building is so important. I mean, we've even seen, you know, partial fruit of it, you know, like we were at lunch today, you know, and you can build relationships with the waitresses at the restaurants you go to. So speak to that for a minute, a little bit.
Well, I think it is. And it's in all the things. And we just did a in-house visit with a church up in Mississippi, where we did some evaluation and encouraged that wonderful young pastor, Nick, as to some ways to do this. So we can just take from his playbook that we help put out for him. You need to get to know the guy that runs the local diner. That's the mom and pop guy.
Yep.
If it's not him, you need to know, you know, who's running that and who's the manager and who's the two or three key waitresses that are always there at the local thing close to your church.
Right.
Cause they're just ordinary people in your community and they may be very far from God. They may be very strong in their faith. Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
you just got to get to know them and get to know their stories. And how are you going to do that? Well, you're going to eat there pretty regular. You're going to make that your new place.
Yeah, your study hangout.
Yeah. And in between, you know, me and the Lord, I'm going to tip really big.
Yeah.
My parents own a restaurant. I know what waitresses make.
Yeah.
And I know how hard they have to work for it. And I know what it's like to – a lot of them are single moms or going through a hard time. And so when you tip big, makes their day. And – they become your friend very fast.
That's very true.
And it's not a bad thing to have them become your friend as the local pastor, because they may have a need you can help with. You've seen this happen before.
Oh, yeah. All so, the time.
You know, you
all
can also time. go to your nearest, if there's some apartments nearby, you can ask the landlord, here's a bunch of my cards. If there's somebody in this apartment that you know is hungry,
right,
and they barely can make their rent to you, but it means their food is going to be a problem, especially if they have children.
Right.
You know, I'm not trying to take care of some single college kid that can't pay his rent.
Right.
Not that I wouldn't, but yeah. I'm much more interested in that single mom that's working a job, trying to get rent paid.
And feed the kids.
And that's a problem. I want that apartment manager to know.
Oh, yeah.
This card gets her food.
Yeah.
If you just get me the information, and it may not be a lot of food, but I guarantee you we'll get her through the week.
Right.
But you have to let me know.
Yeah.
You know, you can't tell me her name. That's a violation of all kinds of code of ethics or whatever.
Sure.
But you can give her my card and say, if you call this guy, I think we can get you some groceries by the end of the day.
And before you know it, you're building
and relations
with the church.
Any small church can go to the grocery store and spend $25, you know, and buy a whole bunch of Chef Boyardee or Denny Moore beef stew and make somebody's day. And that's community relationships right there. And you never know what's going to happen with that.
Absolutely.
As you know, the rehabs, I love doing rescue missions and rehabs and any of that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
If you spend a little time with those
addiction
guys,
recovery and all that.
Spend a little time with those guys and gals. They're very hungry to change their direction of their life, the trajectory of their life, and they want God's help most of the time.
Oh, yeah.
So, and we're the perfect answer to that. So we can figure out how to funnel them in. So exactly. Those are just some ideas.
Some great ideas, great tips. Yeah. And if you're interested in any of those kind of tips or ideas, you can reach out to us by email or social media, and Stan will get you a whole list of those.
So. Yeah. And part of one of the things we like to do as a ministry to help rescue churches or help churches that may need some of this. If you need a mentor, we're going to help you find one.
Absolutely.
We're going to step up to that plate a little bit. But I have a pretty good network of guys that I can say, hey, here's a phone number. I'm gonna put you two on the line together, and I'm out.
Yep. And if it's not somebody on our board, they're in our network outside of that.
Exactly. Exactly. We want you guys to be connected with people that can give you advice.
Yep. That's excellent. All right. Well, that's a great list, and we hope that everyone who's listened to this found all of this content, dialogue, and information to be inspiring, helpful, and encouraging. We thank all of you for listening to this episode of Rescuing Churches. And as always, we appreciate any thoughts or feedback that you might have about the show. You can reach out to us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at 614 Rebuild, or you can leave us a voicemail at 601-909-0614. We listen to all of our voicemails, and we might even include yours in an upcoming episode.